Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hello and welcome to Beauty Inside Out. I'm your host, Kimberly Snyder, nutritionist, wellness expert, and author. On this podcast, I share my experiences, insights, and knowledge with you on health, beauty, personal development, and wellness. Every week, we have interviews with amazing pioneers in their fields. So joining me in the conversation every week is also my dear friend, Tony, who is a health researcher out of Stanford. Hey, beauties, welcome back. Hey, T, how are you?
I am doing so well. Thank you.
You are doing so well, and I'm excited because we want to talk about a really interesting aspect of wellness today. For most all of us listening to this, I know you beauties are probably really conscious about what you're eating and choosing organic and prioritizing healthy food, which is, you know, a really core part of the lifestyle. But there's another part that unfortunately a lot of us don't pay enough attention to, and that is air quality. And specifically, as we're talking about here today, indoor air quality. And, you know, study after study comes out. I even linked to some research back in, you know, Deepak and I were writing Radical Beauty. And sometimes you read something, but you gloss over, or you don't do anything about it. But there is research showing that indoor air pollution can be worse than outdoor city air. So this is something we need to pay attention to for our overall wellness and the quality of our life.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's scary, T, isn't it?
It's totally, yeah. And as someone that has gone through cycles, especially like when in our, you know, raw food days of being kind of like obsessed with food and then obsessed and then kind of like looking at the different kinds of water and being more conscious about water, I have to say that like air quality has been a major source of neglect for me.
And,
you know, I spent a lot of time probably, you know, in either places that have had a lot of dust, maybe at times I've had mold and I didn't even realize it, or formaldehyde or other things that can be like in carpets and different things. And so it really is a major kind of health consideration.
So what if we, why is it so bad inside if we don't smoke? And, you know, like what's going on inside our house that makes it worse than city air?
Yeah, there's definitely a few different things. I mean, one of the biggest things, I mean, for a lot of people, I think using chemical products, I mean, I think this applies less to beauties because we're, I think most people listening to this are, you know, leaning on the spectrum of using primarily natural products, whether it's on their body or in their home. But if not, or if you haven't made the shift, because I know I've met natural people, you know, quote unquote natural people who don't use natural cleaning products because they think that they don't work as effectively as as the kind of quote unquote chemical ones. But that is a major source of pollution, right? Because if you're putting chemicals on your floor and your dishes, all these, you know, other things like that stuff kind of
breathing it in all the time.
Yeah. It's evaporating into the air and it's, and then it's something that you're, we are taking in. So that's definitely one source. Another major one that, you know, I've seen just in my place, like, is dust. Like dust can
it traps pollution in the dust, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. And dust is not healthy to bring in, and really can accumulate and then can get stuck into your lungs. And like you said, it can bind to other pollutants and other issues at times. And so that's a major one.
Yes, and there's just like all kind, like you said, besides cleaners, we have a lot of wood in the house. I'm just looking at my wooden desk and all the like varnishes and the paint and the, you know, just all the things that we use, it all just adds up, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, two other potential sources too, because I actually came, I moved into a place that fortunately doesn't have carpet in every room, but it has it in the bed and in like two of the bedrooms. And I haven't tested this, and I did use a product that's hopefully supposed to chelate kind of any chemicals or anything, but a lot of new carpets have formaldehyde, which is very toxic. It's literally used to like preserve, you know, preserve bodies kind of when they're, you know.
Is it in all carpets, T?
Not all, but most, like especially not wool or natural carpets, but those are rare, you know. So most new carpets have like a coating that can include different levels of formaldehyde. And so, it's pretty shocking. I don't know. I mean, it's crazy that they would use that, but it is the case.
Well, what kind of product do you use that helps to remove it? Is it like a spray?
Yeah, I actually use this this zeolite powder. So zeolite is a mineral, it's a clay-like mineral. And, you know, I think this is something we've discussed before where we're like, can you take clay internally? Sometimes clay can draw, yeah, it can chelate and draw in heavy metals and bind to them and then help eliminate them. Well, these zeolites, it's like this powder, and I just put a layer over the carpet and then give it some time to kind of hopefully absorb any formaldehyde or metals or any pollutants. And then once it's had the time to bind together, then I'll just like vacuum it up. And then, you know, hopefully, now I don't have like data on like before and after of my, my chemical levels, but yeah, I think it works.
Wow. We have one carpet in our house, which is unfortunately in my bedroom. I want to do that now too.
I'll put a link in the show notes for the zeolites in case, because they're really inexpensive. I got them on Amazon, and yeah, you could easily get them and then put them down. And I feel just it's kind of peace of mind that if there are chemicals, you can hopefully pull them out and then remove them from the carpet.
Wow. And what about, you know, air filters? Because, so step so far is switching to clean home products if you haven't already. And by the way, we have a lot of DIY recipes on the website and also Radical Beauty. Things like vinegar and lemon and baking soda really works fantastically well for cleaning surfaces and even inside your oven. And you know, there's some really great recipes for, you know, replacements for glass cleaner and all kinds of things. So we know that's important, but there's the natural buildup of spores and dust and things like that that happen in our homes too. So how do we even pick an air filter? I feel like there's a bajillion. And then I also read some studies or some, you know, research about some air filters actually do more harm. They like pump bad things back into the air. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. There was some like Sharper Image that were said to be really harmful, actually.
Yeah, it's almost like, I think in general, these ionizers are,
yes,
those don't, it just, yeah, like it kind of just reactivates the pollution. It doesn't really like bind it or contain it, the dust or the pollution. And so that, yeah, that's a really good point. And there's controversy around, like, there's some air kind of units have ozone function, which would be really, too much ozone is bad for your lungs. And ozone is generally, like, you could use it. Like, I've had these ozone air filters with an ozone function before. And what you would use that for is really to, like, kill mold or viruses, but you actually wouldn't want to be in the house. Like, what you would do is turn on the ozone function, leave, let it kind of do its thing, and then let it also settle. And so it's no longer like in the air anymore, and then come back in. But that would be an example of one, you know, another one that could, you know, kind of be a little bit more risky. But in general, like in terms of, and one of the things that we link to is like tips for picking a good air filter, and HEPA is generally a pretty safe choice. There's research behind it. It's good at trapping like up to 99% of airborne pollutants and, you know, especially dust and things like that. And so that's a really, really good place to start.
It's just finding a HEPA air filter, air purifier.
Yeah. Yeah. A good HEPA-based one you could get for as little as like $100 on Amazon. So it doesn't have to be like a huge purchase. There are some that one of the ones we were just discussing before, you and I have chatted about, and that I think is more kind of on the upper end and is like this really advanced new kind of technology that it doesn't just trap it, but actually like just somehow destroys the dust and the chemicals, and it goes even beyond that level. But it's like $800. And so if that's in your budget, great, but you could still get
it. It's expensive, T.
It's expensive,
what?
Yeah.
What brand is it?
It's called Molecule. It's Molecule, I believe, and we'll link to it. But yeah, that's an example kind of the higher end. But again, you can get like, you know, 90, 95% or more of the benefits from just having like a really good HEPA filter that you get on Amazon for like $100.
Okay. Yeah. And so you just, the only thing to, like, you know, I read about these filters is I like to have the windows open. And, yes. But I guess when you're using an air filter, ideally you would just keep the windows closed and purify the air, right? I mean, maybe in the winter, it's not such a big deal for some of us, but.
Yeah, but actually having that is a principle too. Just, I mean, it's a balance. Like, you don't have to have the air filter running all the time. And there's sometimes where it's good to have the windows open and get like fresh air and negative ions and all of that. And that's like a principle also of having kind of a cleaner air in your home, is having good circulation and having like airflow too.
Right, exactly. And having some ventilation. So you're right, there's a balance. And you can also just make sure to have some certain plants,
yes,
like peace lilies and certain plants can also help to clean the air.
Yes, especially from chemicals. Like, they won't trap dust or anything like that, obviously, but these plants have been clinically, have research, there's real research showing that these plants can be amazing for helping remove, reduce chemical kind of pollution in the air. So it's an amazing, affordable, and kind of aesthetically pleasing choice for air.
Oh, I love my house plants too.
Yes, I know. You're so good with that. I know. I need some advice.
We need to get you some more plants here. A plant in your bachelor pad over there.
Yeah.
Another one, tea that I've always heard about, and I admit I have never gotten one, but I've always heard that salt lamps are amazing because they help to they also help to somehow purify the air, because the salt has detoxifying qualities. It kind of attracts.
Yes.
What do you think of salt lamps?
Yeah, yeah. And salt lamps are a negative ion. One of the reasons why fresh air and the breeze and the ocean feels so invigorating and kind of pure is that there's a lot. It's not just that it's clean, but it is partly that it's clean, but there's negative ions, a high concentration of negative ions in that air. And one of the things that research has shown is that salt lamps can increase negative ion presence in your home. So you get kind of like that almost like a air freshening benefit to having salt lamps on.
Oh my gosh, I want to get one.
And also this is a side benefit, but we've been talking about sleep a lot lately, and salt lamps too are really like a less bright light. And so for night, when you're winding down and you're really getting ready for bed, having like a salt lamp as your light source versus just like a normal kind of white light that has like a lot more of the blue light spectrum would be a really good way to just kind of soothe you and get you ready for bed and improve your sleep quality. So there's like an extra benefit from that too.
Oh, that's a fantastic idea, T.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah. So everything here is, from, buying a peace lily or an azalea, some of these plants that we list in Radical Beauty, and a snake plant, spider plant. Like, you could just put a plant in your office. Let's say you can't control the whole air, or in your home, switching to clean products, maybe trying a salt lamp, all the way up to getting a HEPA a filter or a more expensive air filter, depending on your budget. But there's lots of things that we can do to really pay attention to our air quality and improve it. So yeah. It's great, T. Thank you for bringing this to our attention, because again, there's parts of, wellness that we focus on a lot, like food, which is super important. But then again, the thoughts we think and the meditation and the cleaning products and the way, there's so many other aspects of wellness that have a profound impact on our health and our energy. Yeah. And so we need to talk about all of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you, T, for this amazing segment idea. I really enjoyed it. I hope you beauties did too. Remember that we have lots of information in the show notes if you guys want to check out. Oh, and also that carpet product, T. I'm really interested in that.
Yes. Yeah, I'll definitely put that into the notes.
Perfect. Well, thank you, T. And thank you so much, beauties. Don't go anywhere. We have an amazing interview for you right after the break.
When it comes to bra shopping, it can really be a nightmare, right? So often it's hard to find a bra that looks good and feels comfortable, and we've all had those frustrating fitting room experiences. I recently discovered the brand Third Love, who offers bras in sizes from AA through G, while most lingerie brands only carry 15 sizes. Third Love has 60 sizes, including half cups. you're probably wondering, what are half cup sizes? That's because no other company makes bras in half cup sizes. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now, they are offering my beauties 15% off your first order. To find the bra you've always been waiting for, and all you have to do is answer a few simple questions from Third Love's Fit Finder quiz. It literally just takes a minute, and you can do it all from the comfort of your home. This year, make the change that will change the way you think about bras. Go to thirdlove.com/beauty now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/beauty.
Hey, this is Michelle.
And this is Matt from Thug Kitchen. You can listen to our new podcast, Forked Up, right here on Podcast One.
We've had some fun recently with our guests, including Nick Guillory from BuzzFeed and comedian Jackie Johnson. Check it out.
I don't think I've ever heard of the word kale before, like, 19.
That's what I'm saying. I used to work at a Cajun restaurant, and we put a piece of kale and a lemon wedge on every plate. It said, lemon and kale make the sale. I was like, I'm going to eat the damn garnish, that waxy plastic that we put on the side of the crab salad.
Join us for Forked Up, a Thug Kitchen podcast, every Thursday, exclusively on Apple Podcasts, or download and listen at podcastone.com or on the new Podcast One app.
Hey, beauties, welcome back. I'm so excited for a very special interview I have for you today. I have Justin Ehrlich, who is an acupuncturist and an expert in integrative Chinese medicine. So, Justin, thank you so much for being here with us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So we talk a lot about Ayurveda on the podcast because I've personally studied Ayurveda, Justin, but we don't talk as much about Chinese medicine principles around Chinese medicine. I've tried acupuncture myself. I love it. I love the idea of the meridians. So maybe you could just give us like a overview.
Absolutely. I mean, Chinese medicine, like Ayurvedic medicine, is it's an ancient medicine, something that's been around for thousands of years, and fundamentally, a lot of the sort of ancient medical systems are really about this integration of body, mind, and spirit, or physical body, emotional body, spiritual body, and whether we break that into the sort of three Dantian, three burner model of Chinese medicine, or you have the seven chakra systems from Ayurveda. It's about sort of looking at the individual in relationship to the entirety of the world and the entirety of their experiences rather than looking at disjointed parts. It's about sort of integration of the entire being, including the environment, rather than just looking at my arm or my elbow or something where it's just an isolated part. And Chinese medicine has its own technical language, different from Ayurvedic and different from Western medicine. But fundamentally, it's really just about that entirety of the person.
Well, and when you say spirit, is there a meditation aspect or stillness practice?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, many of the practices that come in Chinese medicine, there's a big interweaving of Taoist philosophy and Taoist thinking. And Taoists, of course, have their own versions of yogic practices, including breath work, including meditation, including stretching and physical exercises, mental work, emotional work, cognitive therapy work. So really, it's this very complex or complete approach of looking at the person and how do we work with the physical body. How do we work with the mental body, the thinking body, and how do we work with meditation connecting to something that is, you know, much bigger than us, whether we call that God or
universe,
whatever language, spirit. Universe, the great spirit, you know, like names all aside, it's into something much more amazing and magical and grand than just our immediate understanding of the world.
So I want to go back to the Taoist philosophy in a moment, Justin. But first, you know, you've talked a lot about, this whole this interest in biohacking and neurohacking and how we can really optimize our brain power and just like our creative power in general. How does that relate to Chinese medicine?
Well, to me, the the sort of yogis of ancient times, whether they be from India or they be the Taoist monks, were really kind of the original biohackers. And biohacking...
I love it.
Right. I mean, because really what they were doing is trying to optimize the function of the body physically, emotionally, spiritually. And whether we drop this into sort of the Western medical model and we look at something like psychoneuroimmunology and how the psychology affects the neurology and the immunology, you're really talking about this whole idea of an integrated being. And what I think is different between sort of modern biohacking and what I would maybe call original biohacking or ancient biohacking is sort of like the motivation behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm taking a supplement, I'm looking for the next best vitamin or the next best antioxidant just so that I can work another couple hours.
Right.
So that I can keep my skin looking a particular way, that I can have a certain body type or body function, not age as much. That is technically biohacking, but it's biohacking without a certain degree of personal awareness or cultivation, and sort of like the why that motivates us is really something that the ancients were concerned about.
Like alignment, oneness, going deeper into
So it's about using any sort of supplement, whether that be a Western pharmaceutical, whether that be a Chinese herb, an Ayurvedic herb, acupuncture, essential oils, dietary stuff, meditations, breath work. Doesn't really matter what the tool is, but it's really like, how are we using the tool and really why are we using the tool? What is our motivating factor and what are we trying to improve in our lives and where is it supposed to take us? But if we don't really get in touch with the why, then we kind of just become dependent on this supplement or that supplement. And
sure, and run around and it never ends, does it? The search never ends.
Exactly. And what we want to do is to be empowered in the process rather than just dependent on a product I sell or a product you sell or a product produced by a pharmaceutical company or whatever it is. Like, we want to just grow and come more into love and light and personal identity.
Yes, exactly. It really is, all things are connected in all parts of our lifestyle and the way that we live and our relationships and our, you know, our stillness or meditation practices add to that. From a Chinese perspective, Justin, because, you know, a starting point for many of us is food or herbs or self-care practices. What are some simple botanicals or plant foods that someone could source at the local market, you know, that we can start to incorporate? I know that ginseng is something that I thought, you know, I may be mistaken, but I think is also considered a great herb to use for most body types in Chinese medicine, or if not, other sort of plant foods we can source.
Well, probably one of the pinnacles of sort of Taoist cultivation in terms of day-to-day stuff is the reishi mushroom. And it's not really a food.
I love medicinal mushrooms.
Yes. Yeah. Mushrooms are really like a magical, magical thing.
And they're like, they are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. They really are some of the primordial energy of the planet in a magical way. Some of the first beings on the planet were mushrooms. You know, if you look at plants as beings.
They're ancient. They're wise.
They have
wisdom for us.
Exactly. And reishi, in Chinese, is called lingzhi, but reishi, the name rei, means spirit. So it's a spiritual mushroom. That's literally, shi means mushroom. So reishi means a spiritual mushroom. And it's used many times as a tea. It's not really a food in the sense that you're ingesting the mushroom itself. You're really more steeping it to make a tea or a soup and drinking it. But as like a day-to-day thing, you know, the amount of research into reishi mushroom and what it can do for the immune system and for the mental body and for the strength of the physical body is pretty extensive at this point.
I agree, Justin. I've been really interested in mushrooms for a while. And then I went to Japan a couple months ago and there was like mushrooms everywhere. And so I started looking more into them and then got really interested in reishi and chaga and some of these medicinal ones. And I'm glad you brought that up because I think it's such a powerful inclusion that we can bring into our lives.
It's simple. And reishi, when it's in its pure form, has this sort of bitter, dark chocolate flavor. It's actually really quite delicious. So it's an easy thing to incorporate as a very mild tea. Many of the facets of sort of Taoist biohacking were really sort of about this realm of microdosing rather than taking mushrooms in the sense of trying to have a hallucinogenic experience and really like blow out the system. They were much more about like this regular consistent practice of like making a commitment that I'm going to develop a relationship with reishi mushroom. I'm going to take it every day and really get to know it.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. All right, give us one more, Justin. That was a really good one. It's going to be hard to top reishi.
Reishi is a tough one to top. Another, in the food world, similar to ginseng being sort of considered a king of herbs in Chinese medicine, lotus root, which is regularly used as a food, is considered an adaptogen of foods.
What does it look like?
Lotus root is a tuber-looking vegetable. You can find it at Japanese or Chinese grocery stores. Sometimes it's stored in water. Sometimes it's just on the shelves with the other vegetables. And you will often you peel it and boil it. And then you can saute it. And it's crisp. You can put it in soups. It's delicious. It's a very mild flavor.
Is it like Jerusalem artichokes? Does it look like that?
It doesn't look – it's longer, kind of like a potato.
Okay.
But its flavor is actually a little similar to Jerusalem artichokes. It's a very mild.
I love that taste.
Nutty flavor.
Take on different flavors.
Yes. Yeah, it does. And it has this crisp, crunchy texture, the way that like a Jerusalem artichoke would have or a water chestnut would have. But it is considered, in some of the ancient Chinese herbal medicine books, it treats the hundreds of diseases, which basically means it kind of does a lot of different things. And it's a easy food to incorporate. The Chinese sometimes will saute it. Sometimes you will put it in a soup. You can dry it out. It makes delicious chips. If you have a dehydrator, slice it thinly. And it's great for us, lots of vitamins and fiber and all the sort of like on a biomedical model, all the things that are good for us. But it's considered an adaptogenic food, much in the way that reishi mushroom is an adaptogenic medicine, if you will.
Thank you, Justin. I have a Japanese market right down the road from me, so I wonder if they might have it. I'm going to check it out.
They will. In Japanese, lotus root is called renkon.
Okay.
Which you'll see. You'll definitely see it at the Japanese market. It's really common there. That's where I usually buy it, is at the Japanese market.
Justin, now I want to go back with the time we have left and talk a little bit about Taoist philosophy, which, interestingly enough, that we're doing this podcast today, I've finished writing my last book, and my editor said, hey, read these while you're writing this book just to have them in your mind. And he sent me two different translations of the, and I don't know if I'm saying this right, but the Tao Te Ching.
The Tao Te Ching, yeah.
The Tao Te Ching, and oh my gosh, Justin, they have blown me away. I sit with them. I read the verses. They've spoken to my heart. They're so in alignment with yogic philosophy. Like you said, it's all oneness, right? It's all like words, but it is one of the most beautiful things I've ever read. I can't believe I never read the whole thing before. I'm in love with it.
So the Tao Te Ching is one of the classics of Taoism or of Chinese culture, if you will. And one of the ways we can look at it for people who are interested in that text is just read the first three sections, the first three chapters. Many times, really classical Chinese medicine books, the first three chapters outline everything else that's going to follow. Everything after that is like expansion upon what the first three say. And for me, I love chapter two particularly, which is sort of ever seeing good, bad, pretty, ugly, right, wrong, etc. It sort of points out how when we get caught up in this duality of good, bad, pretty, ugly,
judging,
exactly, that we lose it. We can never really find the truth of the world if we're stuck always in judgment. And that is, for me, one of the biggest things that I work with my clients is really like our internal judgment. And trying to understand, sometimes the judgments that we carry, they come from traumas in our childhood, they come from social programming, how we were raised, they come from cultural events that happen, and we're not even aware that that's going on inside of us. We just assume that it's normal. And sometimes those judgments become the source of our unhappiness or of our illness or of our suffering. And
it's, it's a huge source of suffering, Justin. And, you know, the Heart Sutra where it says, you know, the way is not difficult for those that have no preferences. And I sat with that for a long time. I'm like, what does that mean? And then it's like, oh, if you see things as not good, not bad, like you said, not fat, not skinny, things just are as they are. And we just accept things as they come. It's such a practice because it's not how most of us were raised. But when we start to sit with that and we can start to integrate that more, it's such a peaceful way of living.
It really is. It's a game changer for many of us. And especially in an age with so much social media and all these pressures to have the perfect Instagram life.
Right. And show the best selfies and the filters and everything.
Right. And there's something to be said for having all of that and being inspired by all of that. But then it can also, it can overtake us in ways that we're not aware of. And we want to watch for those things and really try to move from a space of compassion and what I like to use the term of like inner honesty. Mm-hmm. Can we just have the strength to be in the language of Brené Brown or something like that, to be vulnerable with ourselves first, you know, to be like, wow, I'm feeling sad today. I'm feeling angry today. I'm feeling happy today, and not judge it. Just allow for that.
And not try to distract away from it, but actually just really feeling into the feelings, I think is powerful too. And sometimes we don't even have to label them, Justin. We can just feel the feeling and sit with it, and then the energy starts to dissipate. But a lot of us repress or suppress or pick up the phone or go get a beer or whatever it is.
And exactly.
Sometimes just sitting with it is the way to actually release it. Otherwise, it just stores all that energy.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are these, use the term suppress or repress, and they're actually different acupuncture channels that work with emotions or experiences that are consciously suppressed versus ones that we repress that we don't even realize we're doing. And so we have this capacity within the Taoists, because they spent so much time contemplating all of this and realizing that sometimes we have these patterns that we're not even aware that we're doing, versus I know that I'm irritated and I'm not comfortable expressing my anger, and so I always just suppress it. I just keep shoving it down, but I'm conscious of it. Mm-hmm. And so we have different ways to help people to kind of like work through those different layers of our experiences so that hopefully we can break free from all of it and just be, flow with the Tao, you know, to use the Taoist terms, to be free and easy in our wandering through life.
Oh, I love it. Well, Justin, last question for you, because you brought up acupuncture and, you know, keeping our meridians flowing, keeping the chi going through. If someone, you know, obviously the, you know, a powerful thing to do is to go see you or to get acupuncture. But if we can't, is there things at home we can do to unblock a meridian or, I don't know, like something we can do to sort of keep it healthy, keep them healthy?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like for me, acupuncture is just one tool, right? Right. It's part of my toolbox, but herbal medicine, essential oils, dietary choices, lifestyle choices, exercise, meditation, breath work, all these things are tools that we all have the capacity to tap into. And I work with, you know, many clients that are not here in San Diego, because acupuncture I can only do if I'm in person. Herbal medicine, essential oils, all those things, you don't need to be in person with somebody. And really, it's based in San Diego. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm based in San Diego. But I have clients that are in Canada and in Europe and in Asia and across the US. And, you know, many times you don't have to. One of the best things we can do is have a meditative practice, have a yogic practice, a qigong practice, a tai chi practice, a mindfulness-based practice, anything that begins to get us to slow down and be present with ourselves and to use our breath, to use our body, to connect into our heart and just learn to be honest with ourselves, you know, separate from medical treatment, any sort of like cultivational process we can do where we slow down and be present with ourselves, I think is by far the most empowering and healing thing we can do.
Beautiful. Because it affects everything, like all the practices you're talking about, down to the cellular level. And now all this Western medical research is even starting to slowly catch up and back that up. But like you're saying, just all the, it's so powerful, the work we can do within ourselves, which is beautiful.
And it's very difficult for Western medicine to study these things because their impacts are so global. Mm-hmm. It's not like we can really do this double-blind placebo-controlled study to see how it affects one particular cell, because the impact of meditation, of breath work, is so global in our body. It's not really meant to be studied via the Western paradigm. It mm-hmm. can be, but the Western paradigm is very limited in its capacity to understand global sort of systemic impact of things. And yet we know that it's true. Doing deep breathing affects us physically, emotionally, and spiritually. You know, there's no question really about right. it within yeah. the Western paradigm, or even just the day-to-day experience.
Well, Justin, there's so much information that you have to offer. I really appreciate you coming and sharing some of it with us. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
And everyone, if you'd like to find more information about Justin and his offerings, if you live in San Diego, of course, you know, consider seeing him for a session in person. His website is justinerlich.com. We're going to link to it in the show notes. And again, Justin, this has been amazing. I feel like I could talk to you all day. So thank you.
You're very welcome. For anybody that's curious, on my website, there is a download that talks about this idea of discovering yourself. That's just a free PDF.
All right.
Take a look at it, download it. You get a good intro into sort of Taoist philosophy on a very practical level. You know, it's just a basic intro.
Beautiful. I'll check it out myself, Justin.
Excellent.
And thank you so much, beauties, for tuning in. Have an amazing rest of your day. Take great care of yourself. And we will see you back here on Thursday. Okay, beauties, I will be back with you on Thursday for my Q&A session show, where I answer questions from the Beauty Detox community. To submit your question, please go to KimberlySnyder.com/AskKimberly. Thanks so much, and see you again soon. And always remember, progress, not perfection, as true beauty comes from the inside out.